Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. It's been a busy few days in the golf world. I certainly look forward to explaining why I look so sunburnt from the North Carolina heat. But Rex, let's first start with something that just came out here on Wednesday morning. Rory McIlroy has withdrawn his name from consideration for the PGA Tour Policy Board. Of course, this might also be a game of semantics because Rory McIlroy, as he met with the media at Quail Hollow, says it got, quote, messy and complicated once he announced his intentions to rejoin the board and take Webb Simpson's spot since he wanted to step down. As it happens, Webb Simpson will now stay on the PGA Tour Policy Board through the end of his term, which is at the end of 2025, while Rory McIlroy will instead be left to try to effect change from the outside. What is your read on all of this?
I think messy is the perfect word, because you look at how this went down. And look, this isn't necessarily, if you look at just the nuts and bolts of this and the facts, I don't think there's anything extraordinary here that would have ruffled feathers the way it ended up ruffling feathers. I think the issue with this is that you only have to go back a couple of months to November, when Rory stepped down from the board and was replaced by Jordan Spieth. And there's some weird rules and regulations. I don't want to bore anybody with it, but to become a player director, essentially you have to be elected by the entire membership. To become a replacement player director, which is what Jordan Spieth did last year when Rory stepped down, and what Rory wanted to do this time around, you get elected by the player directors and the independent directors on the board. You're kind of circumventing the vote, is essentially what you're doing. And you have this rift, and we're going to get into this more later in the podcast, but you have this divide that's growing more and more by the day on the PGA Tour. And it's the stars and the rank and file, for lack of a better term. And the stars are being taken care of in a way that they've never been taken care of on the PGA Tour before. We talk about signature events. We talk about bigger purses, bigger points for those events, equity shares, which we kind of dug into last week. Everything the tour is doing right now is to cater to the stars for obvious reasons. You need to stop the flow of stars to live golf, so you need to take care of them. On the other half of that equation is the rank and file. And there has been pushback about the way the signature event fields are filled. There's been pushback about how many points have been given to signature events. There's been a lot of pushback even over the last week about the equity program. And in this particular case, it looks like the tour is taking care of another player director. It looks like they're circumventing the electorate. It looks like they're doing this in a shady way. I'm not saying it is in a shady way, but the optics of it looked awful.
But it's not just a rift between the PGA Tour superstars and the PGA Tour's rank and file. This, Rex, feels like a rift between Rory McIlroy and some of the most influential players who are on that PGA Tour policy board, most notably whether it's Patrick Cantlay. I also think if Tiger Woods, the biggest star in the game, wanted Rory McIlroy to rejoin the board, and his voice apparently speaks the loudest, he would have Rory McIlroy back on the policy board. The fact that Rory has been rejected, withdrawn his name, however you want to phrase it, I still think this is an embarrassment for the PGA Tour. You have the most popular active player, the most influential active player, wanting to take back his spot. I understand he could have seen it through. He could have weathered the storm last fall. It was clear that when he said that he was butting his head against the wall, that he was obviously frustrated with the direction that the PGA Tour policy board was going. I get all of that. However, his intentions have been very clear of late, that he wants to reunite the game. And yet he's being rejected. The lack of self-awareness by the PGA Tour's policy board members to reject this notion of a player who wants to unify the game, who sees what the division has done, sees what unifying the game could do, not just for 2025, but for 5, 10, 15 years down the road. To reject that notion is just so oblivious to how golf fans are feeling at the moment.
And you might be conflating that a little bit. 2 points I wanted to touch on. One, Tiger Woods has to be the loudest voice in that room. No, I mean, we can all agree with that. I can't imagine a scenario where he just sits back in the back of the room and doesn't say anything and just draws doodles on a notepad. I don't think that's the way this is working out. It is. There's a lot of palace intrigue here. When you look, clearly there is a rift between Patrick Cantlay and Rory McIlroy. This goes back a couple of years, just not to the Ryder Cup last year. And whatever it is that's going on behind those doors, I think probably does have to do with what you're alluding to here. The idea that Rory's vision of the future of the PGA Tour is obviously different than Patrick Cantlay's vision of the PGA Tour. But the more important point is, what is Tiger Woods' vision of the PGA Tour? I don't think I think
it has to be closer to Patrick Cantlay's vision.
I would tend to agree with that. And look, we're kind of speculating here, and this is wild speculation, but there is no other answer for this. We all know that Tiger and Rory are close. It's not as though these guys aren't friends. However, when you look at wherever it is we're going to go, when you look at the issues that are going on inside that boardroom right now, and the thing that's holding up whatever may come next, it's clear that Tiger Woods, it's becoming increasingly clear, that Tiger Woods is on the other side of this, the other side of Rory, as far as trying to unify the game. It seems clear the other side, Jay Monahan, the way his vision of the game goes. And I would say this probably goes back to that Monday meeting in the Bahamas between the policy board, player directors, and Yasser Al-Rumayyan, the governor of the Public Investment Fund. Because from what I've been told, and have been told a lot about that meeting, but the one thing that did come out of it is Yasser's vision of the future of what he thinks pro golf should be, and a lot of the board members, aka probably Rory McIlroy in this case, vastly different. And I think we probably saw the internal ugly politics. This is how the sausage got made. And in this particular case, it got made in a way that, you're right, was embarrassing to the PGA Tour. It's embarrassing again to Rory McIlroy, who just went through this about a year ago now, as we sneak up on the Canadian Open in June 6th and the framework agreement. For the second time in less than a year, he's been embarrassed by the PGA Tour. That's the part that I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around.
Isn't this also a huge risk to reject Rory's inclusion? I mean, Webb Simpson said that he wanted Rory McIlroy back on the PGA Tour policy board, the strategic sports group, which is led by Fenway Sports, with whom Rory McIlroy has a relationship, would want Rory McIlroy back on that board. Yasser Al-Rumayyan, who actually has a relationship with Rory McIlroy, they spoke, at least on multiple, had multiple conversations about what the future of LIV, what the future of professional golf could look like, would want Rory McIlroy on the PGA Tour policy board. The fact that the PGA Tour policy board is rejecting Rory and keeping him at arm's length when he wants to be brought back into the fold, given all of the partnerships and affiliations and relationships that he has built over the past couple years, it's just, if that is not proof, Rex, that this whole thing is broken, I don't know what is.
And again, I think you're probably stepping over the speculation line a little bit, at least for me. You're probably going at just a tad too far on that front, because you're sort of speculating that everyone else in the boardroom is against what Rory stands for. And I don't think that's fair. I think there's probably...
No, Webb Simpson is not.
Well, and I'd be curious where Adam Scott falls. We got a glimpse of maybe where Jordan Spieth falls. And there's so many moving parts in all of this. I think the one part that stands out, and you touched on the idea that Rory's relationship with Fenway Sports probably made this just as complicated as this internal politics has made it. Because there was an issue going into, if the PGA Tour was going to do this deal with SSG, which it ended up doing, had Rory stayed on the board, there might have been a conflict of interest. And there had been a lot of talk sort of internally, sort of back, you know, behind the door politics when it comes to that. So if you're going to connect the dots, maybe he stepped down, allowed that vote to go forward, assuming that, okay, I can come back onto the board next year. I'm not even quite sure that's what's happening here. Again, I keep going back to Tiger Woods and where he lands and all this and what he thinks the game should look like. And that's the one, like, we'll all get an opportunity to talk to him next week at Valhalla. So many things you always want to ask him, but that would be the one I'd love to see him chop full of sodium pentothal and sit down and tell me exactly, what do you think the game's going to be? Where do you want the game to be in 20 years? Because this indicates to me, and this is as far as I'm willing to take it, that Rory and Tiger don't see eye to eye on this.
Rory and Tiger don't see eye to eye. I think it's becoming increasingly obvious that Patrick Cantlay and Rory McIlroy do not see eye to eye. That needed unanimous approval when the PGA Tour policy board. And the fact of the matter is, it did not receive unanimous approval. I do think there needs to be some sort of PR messaging that's going around how the PGA Tour policy board is going to put this out publicly, because there is going to be a lot of confusion among golf fans, where you have the most influential player on the PGA Tour wants to affect change, wants to end the division, wants to end the 2 years of acrimony and division that has ripped apart men's professional golf with so much apathy going on, and yet he's being rejected. I hope that they at least have some sort of PR offensive, because it certainly is confusing. Rex, moving on, the PGA of America announced most of its field for next week's PGA Championship. I think most notably, there will now be 16 LIV players in the field, with Patrick Reed, Taylor Gooch, David Pooge, Dean Burmester, among those who received invitations to play next week at Valhalla? Simple question. Did the PGA of America get this one right?
I think so. 100%. We talked about this on the roundtable yesterday on Golf Today, and we kind of got caught up with the Taylor Gooch one. That's the name that's going to stand out, right? That's the one that everyone's going to point to and say that I'm not quite sure about that guy. I keep going back to the idea that I don't want him as my ally because, as we've pointed out numerous times, like, he's not willing to go the extra mile to try to qualify. We pointed out what Joaquin Niemann did towards the end of last season. Like, he saw the future and knew I need to make an effort to try to get into these major championships. And here's how I can do it. Play the Australia Open, play some of these other events that do get world ranking points. You're not going to jump up crazy high winning the Australian Open, but you're going to jump up enough, and it's going to be sending a clear enough message to the PGA of America that he makes an easy invite. Taylor Gooch is not as easy as an invite. I will say this, and my argument was, I feel like this falls in line to what the PGA of America always does, and they always invite, if for whatever reason you're not in one of the automatic locked-in categories, you get an invitation to the PGA Championship, they always invite someone in and around the top 100. It's not a hard number. It's in and around the top 100. Now, you're going to point to me, and you're going to say, well, Taylor Gooch is 644th in the world ranking. Well, I'm going to poo-poo all over that, and I'm going to say he's 35th in Data Golf's rankings, and I have become a huge convert to Data Golf because I am tired of dancing around this idea that we can't quantify what these guys are doing now. So I've spent about the last 3 weeks, and that's not an easy website to follow, man. I do not have an advanced degree in mathematics. However, I will say that seems like a much better website, and he is 35th on that website. And I think he probably should have gotten this. I don't like it when you and I banter back and forth and say he deserves it. I would argue that no one actually deserves it, but should he be in the field? Yes.
And absolutely, I do believe that the PGA of America got this one right. Because you think about this. What is the PGA Championship's identity? It doesn't have the history like the Open Championship. It doesn't have the most pageantry and tradition like the Masters. It doesn't have the most open field or sort of the hardest examination, which is what a U.S. Open has. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, the PGA Championship has been the best field in golf. They typically find a way to invite the top 100 players in the official world golf ranking and fill out their field with club pros or various other invitations. That has been harder to do because of the official world golf ranking and how it now skews towards the PGA Tour and obviously excludes LIV, which withdrew its bid for official world golf ranking points. It cannot seriously consider itself the best field in golf, particularly not the strongest major championship field, if you do not include the LIV golf players. And so I do think, Rex, that this was a significant moment because this is the very first time since LIV Golf launched in 2022 that a major organization is acknowledging that performances on LIV are now worthy of major inclusion.
Indirectly.
It's not a direct pathway, but I do think it presents now a possible path forward for other major championships to follow. I just think it's a really encouraging move by the PGA, and they should be applauded for being above the fray. It's their imperative to put together the best major championship field possible, and it certainly seems like they've done that with the players that they've decided to invite.
I agree. We talked about this at the Masters, and it's now going to fall on all of the major championships to decide if the best players are in your field or not. And it's going to require some tough decisions, at least in the short term, at least until the PGA Tour, the PIF, LIV Golf figured out what we're going to do next, because that's going to dictate sort of how the major championships are going to respond. But in the short term, it's up to the PGA of America to look beyond the politics and look beyond the riff and say, yes, Taylor Gooch is our guy. Again, not the hero I want, but he is a hero that I think we all should get. I'm going to take us off on two sort of side roads here, and you guys apparently don't like it when we go on the side roads. So these will be quick, and they are related to the topic at hand. I did Golf Today yesterday, and you will immediately know who sent these questions along, right? You ready for this question? Because I'd like to get your answer to this, because my answer came with nothing but sweat stains because it made me so nervous. Yeah, here you go. You ready for this? And I want your answer. Phil tweeted a threat that one day no LIV players would attempt to compete in majors as a way of holding those events ransom to grant them a direct pathway into the major championships. Talking about LIV players. You ever see Brooks Koepka or John Rahm boycotting majors just because Taylor Gooch or Joaquin Niemann aren't in the field? Go.
No, that's laughable.
That was a question. And who did it come from?
conspiracy theorist, yeah. Eamon Lynch. That Phil tweet also included, it's since been deleted, F around and find out.
Yeah, well,
which is wonderful.
Yeah. It did. I thought that was ridiculous. Like, look, we can sit here and bluster. And maybe Phil does. Like, I did grant that. Like, maybe Phil feels like he needs to make a statement and he's going to skip the major.
Sure, but Phil's also saying that he's also close to retirement. Brooks Koepka last year at the PGA Championship, after winning the Wanamaker Trophy, declined to say that this was a big moment for LIV or that he was carrying the flag for LIV players. So, no, I do not think it is imminent that if the majors decide not to include LIV players, that suddenly he would be boycotting them.
John Rahm or Brooks are going to skip a major? Are you kidding me?
Just stop laughing.
If you cut off a leg, they would still want to play in the major championships. They're not going to do it for Taylor Gooch, for sure. And Joaquin Neiman, then we can sit here and talk about, look, he deserves it. He should be in that field. They're certainly not doing it for Taylor Gooch. All right, here's the second one, and I'll make this one quick. And this is a little bit different topic. But this is interesting on a number of levels, and I did want to get into this. Webb Simpson got a sponsor exemption into this week's Wells Fargo Championship. This is actually this is his fourth sponsor exemption into a signature event this year, along with Adam Scott. The optics of that as a board member are lousy. Both of those players are board members, regardless of whether he is deserving. Talking about Webb. Does the PGA Tour need more strident rules governing free passes into these lucrative events? I want to hear your take, and we can button it up on that. However, keep in mind who I did this roundtable with yesterday.
Who's your partner?
It was Johnson Wagner. So you think that through, and you tell me what a minefield that is. Johnson Wagner is a couple of things. One, he's a member of Quail Hollow, just like Webb Simpson. Two, he's a neighbor of Webb Simpson's. Three, he's a guy that got a lot of sponsor exemptions in his career because Johnson Wagner, like Webb, is also a very likable guy, and he knows how to work with sponsors. He's really, really good at that. There's nothing wrong with that. That's what pros should do. Fourth, and most importantly, Johnson Wagner was a player director on the policy board. And as soon as I saw that question, and I knew who was going to be, I knew that I'm not going to say a word. I'm just going to sit back and watch. This is going to be like spectator sport. He is going to go off, and I would encourage everybody to go online and listen to his response because it was very fiery. I felt like we didn't particularly put him in a fair situation. But what are your thoughts on Webb getting his fourth sponsor exemption into a signature event?
I mean, the optics are obviously horrible. If the PGA Tour is going to continue to allow sponsor exemptions into signature events, which you would think if they're ponying up $20, $25 million purses, yeah, they should be able to invite who they want, including Tiger Woods. If Tiger Woods wants to play, is healthy enough to play, you're not going to tell a sponsor that no, they cannot invite Tiger Woods. I would just simply put like a cap on it. I would allow whatever it's, maybe it's two, maybe it's three free passes a year.
Two seems right.
Yeah, they have a maximum number of sponsor exemptions for non-PGA Tour members. It seems very reasonable to put a cap at two or three. That way you don't have the sort of situation where you're just getting handouts for what appears to be simply because you are a PGA Tour policy board member. Adam Scott falls in the same category. Peter Malnati got a sponsor exemption earlier this year. It's certainly a problem for the PGA Tour. I would fully expect some sort of tweak to those regulations for 2025. You can't have this storyline lingering throughout the signature events for the entirety of the year.
I would, and that's what my suggestion was. Limit it to two. That's 25%. There's eight signature events. That's 25% of all of the signature events. That feels like more than enough of an opportunity for these players to go and make an impact in an event that's, again, giving out more points, no cut. Like, it's sort of a freebie here that you get to go out and try your hand. So here's your opportunity. And if that doesn't work, then you have to kind of go through the same path that everyone else does, either the Aeon 5 or the Aeon 10. That being said, and you and I can sit here, and you're really good at this, making things seem very simple and very obvious. It would create a problem if it's Tiger Woods. It's not going to happen. I truly don't believe it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But if Tiger Woods wanted to play all eight signature events, it would be really, really hard for the tour to be like, you only get two. One of those is going to be the Genesis. And so you get to choose the other one. That would be tough, man.
I think, there's probably different categories that you can have it in. Like, it's hard to tell. Let's say Justin Thomas is 31st in the official world golf ranking, or Jordan Spieth falls to 31st in the official world golf ranking. Like, there should be a category that maybe you get three sponsor exemptions if you're in like a certain window of opportunity. I'm with you. I don't think it's going to come into fruition with Tiger, but I think some bigger name players, potentially a player like Will Zalatoris, who's coming back from an injury, if he is not included in those field ordinarily, putting the cap at two does feel a little bit tight. Does Damon just sit back and watch?
Just like I did.
Eamon just kind of go through his conspiracy theories one by one.
Yeah, I'm not going to bore you with the rest of these questions, and it was 15 questions, which I was pretty shocked about, because I knew that one, Johnson Wagner being outspoken. And Johnson actually started it I feel like he was hangry or something. He was asked about Wells Fargo stepping down and reports that Truist is going to step in as the sponsor. And he started the entire roundtable with, I'm not going to talk about Truist because I feel like Wells Fargo deserves their week in the sunlight. So he clearly came in to this roundtable with a chip on his shoulder. So, yes, Damon and I just sat back and watched.
Speaking of the Wells Fargo Championship,
it's the gift with the popcorn and Jon Stewart. That's what
soon to be called the Truist Classic or whatever it's going to be in 2025. What is your biggest storyline this week? No Scottie Scheffler. He's at home in Dallas, either awaiting the birth of his child with wife Meredith. Maybe they've already had it and they're keeping it under wraps. Regardless, there's been no indication that Scottie Scheffler would not be ready for next week's PGA Championship. Also not in the field who is eligible is Ludvig Åberg, who suffered some knee inflammation, letting it rest. He also said, see you next week at Valhalla. So no long-term concern there. What is your biggest storyline, Rex, for the week in Charlotte?
It dovetails with what we talked about last week. Like, Jordan Spieth is just starting to concern me, or I should say is concerning on a number of levels.
Starting.
Yes, round it down like that. It's concerning when we talk about the possibility of an injury. And again, Johnson was involved in a conversation last week during the telecast, and he and AL, about he needs to do something as far as, well, on a couple of fronts. One, they both feel like he needs to do something different swing-wise. They didn't say this isn't about his swing coach. This has nothing to do with that. They just don't feel like he's going down the right road. And I'll leave that to the experts, the guys who know much more about the golf swing than I am. The thing that you and I got into last week, it's clearly he's injured. It's clearly he's having a hard time. And whether if it hurts now or not doesn't matter. In this particular case, if you're worried about the tendon in your left wrist popping out anytime you swing the golf club. And to hear AO talk about it, he said it actually would happen to him when he was still playing in his backswing. Imagine that. At the top of your backswing, the tendon in your hand and your left wrist pops out. I don't know how you play the game at the highest level with that kind of pain, with that kind of concern, with that thing looming over your head. I'm going to watch him this week, and I hope to see some sort of progress, but I'm not particularly hopeful.
Quail Hollow was a site of Jordan Spieth's 5-0 performance a couple years ago at the President's Cup. However, he was partnered with Justin Thomas as week. This is like the obvious storyline for me. It's Rory McIlroy. He's heading to one of his personal playgrounds at Quail Hollow. 3 wins there, 5 other top 10 finishes. Just a ballpark that's absolutely tailor-made for his skill set. The last time he teed it up, he also had a partner in Shea Lowry, but I also think it's fair to say that he carried that partnership to victory at the Zurich Classic. And oh yeah, another major championship, an opportunity to end a now decade-long majorless drought is just 8 days away at this point. If he can continue the good form, if he continued the good vibes, I think that's a huge week, potentially confidence-wise. Rory said that he drove it as well as potentially he ever has on Sunday at TPC New Orleans, thought his iron play was rounding into form as well, put in some good practice earlier this week at Quail Hollow. I would expect yet another good performance. I also think Wyndham Clark, the defending champion at this tournament, it's crazy to think of how much his life has changed over the past 365 days. Had an opportunity to speak with him at US Open Media Day on Monday. I think he is one of the rare players, Rex, on the PGA Tour who could actually challenge Scottie Scheffler. He is wholly unafraid of the challenge that has been presented by himself, by Scottie Scheffler. He doesn't do it in, I would say, a brash way or a cocky way. I think he's competitively arrogant. I think a lot of players, once you get to that level, do have that sort of characteristic. But I think with the combination of his mindset and the sort of firepower and explosiveness that Wyndham Clark has, I do think he could be a potential threat to Scottie Scheffler over the next couple of years. Speaking, Rex, of US Open Media Day, had an opportunity to head to Pinehurst. It was my third visit to Pinehurst, but actually the first time that I brought my clubs. I covered the 2014 US Open won by Martin Kaymer, and I covered the 2019 US Amateur won by Andy Ogletree in the championship match over John Augustine. So we played number 2 on Monday, which will obviously be hosting the US Open next month. I was blown away I was absolutely blown away. I was obviously familiar with the golf course, Rex, and just playing that golf course, it was reasonably wide fairways, but the greens are so difficult. You could host a U.S. Open there tomorrow if they gave the fairways a haircut, if they gave the greens a haircut, and if they gave sort of the surrounding areas a haircut. It was obvious that they were sort of building in the grass structure and making sure the turf was as strong as possible for tournament week. Like I was grabbing a 60 when I remembered back in 2014, Martin Keimer was putting from everywhere, 10, 20, 30 yards off the fairway. He was taking out the putter. This was not that situation. I did not expect that to be the situation, and it wasn't. But they could give it a haircut tomorrow and play a US Open on there. Back in 2014, just three players broke par. Keimer won by 8 strokes. If there's any sort of weather, though, if it is a little bit softer, I was walking on that golf course thinking there could be some good scores. I absolutely think, kind of like LACC, it's not going to get quite out of control like that, where you had Xander Schauffele and Ricky Fowler tying the U.S. Open record with 62s in the opening round. But I do think you could see double digits under par, which is very un-U.S. Open-like.
I love Pinehurst number 2 as an example of good architecture. And I argue all the time that, you know, we ran into this when they rolled back the golf ball. And I feel like that part of that equation, you can roll back the golf ball, and you also probably need to do something with the club head if you're really worried about how far they're hitting it at the highest level. But good architecture also comes into play. And I think Pinehurst number 2 is a perfect example of this. I covered the U.S. Open in 99. Having seen it there and then what it's evolved to, it's I don't want to say it's a completely different golf course, because I think the Donald Ross greens remain the Donald Ross greens. Everything else they've done around it to make it, one, visually just a better golf course. Like, it's just a stunning golf course with really, really cool corridors. But just the idea that this is what Donald Ross had in mind. And after X number of decades, that look, grass just grows in, trees grow, that's what they do. That doesn't mean that's what Donald Ross wanted. He wanted something entirely different. That's why he built it on that sand structure. That's why it's such a classic golf course. I love the fact that they had enough confidence to do what they did to that golf course. Because if you had you covered it in 99, or I'm sure you watched it in 99, and then it was a completely different golf course, the one that Martin Keimer won on. And I would argue a much better golf course.
Yeah, absolutely. A much better golf course. I played on Monday with two guys from the Fried Egg. Matt, who's a videographer extraordinaire, and Garrett Morrison, who's like one of their editors. Super smart guys. They were basically showing me what Corey Crenshaw had did and why they did it. And walking around that golf course, even though it was soft and receptive, it rained about an inch the day prior. Like, you could see how small the landing areas are on the greens, and how if it gets firm and if it gets fast, how precise you have to be with your approach shots. Yes, it's reasonably forgiving off the tee. I love that aspect of precision with iron play. But I really liked, Rex, those sandy waste areas that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. It was so much more fun to play than just thick, dense, hack-out sort of rough. There was like, it sounds kind of lame to say, but there was a mystery as you were going up to find your golf ball. Like, am I going to get totally boned in the sandy area? Am I going to be in a tuft of grass where I'm not going to be able to get it out? Am I going to have a clean, kind of hard pan lie where I'm able to put the club on the back of the ball and get it on the green? A couple of times I had that. A couple of times, you know, it's just outside the tuft of grass, but on the way down, it catches the grass and it sends your club screaming in different directions. And so I liked that sort of mystery. And I think that'll only be heightened when you get to the U.S. Open. As the USJ official said during the sort of media presentation, this is the first time we're going to have a big crowd at a U.S. Open since 2019. It's been 5 years, whether it's because of COVID or you had a smaller LACC footprint at the country club or LACC. This is going to be, you know, 30, 40, 50,000 fans. You are going to have a lot of foot traffic in those sandy waste areas. So you're going to have even more mystery where, am I going to catch a good lie? Am I going to be in these little tufts of grass? Am I going to be in a footprint, a size 12 New Balance, and then trying to hit it into these Donald Ross greens, which are firm, fast, and so penal if you miss it? I love it. I think it's going to be a great U.S. Open test. Also wanted to give a shout out, Rex, to the folks at Pinehurst, because I played the new number 10 on Tuesday.
Quite the boondoggle.
Tom Doak designed it. Was quite a boondoggle. Not quite as good as our boondoggle last year, which was LACC, then the next day at Pine Pebble Beach. But who is one to complain? Instantly, Pinehurst number 10 automatically goes into my top 10 golf courses what? I've ever played. Yeah, like an absolute masterpiece by Tom Doak. It was made even more impressive, I think, by the fact that they got this done in 6 months. The phone call happened 2 years ago with Tom Pashley, the president and CEO of Pinehurst Resorts. But from the actual clearing, shaping, and growing, it was a six-month process. That is so impressive to make something that is this good, this great of a test, in that short of a time span. I think it just shows sort of like the powerhouse operation that is Pinehurst and the resources that are behind it. I would give it my highest recommendation. I think it was also aided by the fact, Rex, that it played quite well over the past couple of days.
I thought you told me that you didn't play well.
Played extraordinarily well.
Oh, wow. Driver?
For me.
Driver?
Driver, which, again, has been causing issues. A lot of people think that I had the driver yips. I don't think I have the driver yips now upon further reflection. I think I have just been so beaten down mentally by playing Florida golf with its tight fairways. And if you miss it, you're in houses, you're out of bounds, you're in marsh, you're in bunkers, you're in water, that you just get really guidey and just scared to hell to actually, you know, kind of rear back and hit one. Did not lose a single golf ball in 2 days. Again, it's very hard to do at these two golf courses because, again, a lot of the rough has been eliminated. A lot of the trees have been eliminated. You can be in pine straw. You can be in sandy area. But I did not lose a ball. For those wondering, I shot 82, Pinehurst number 2, and 79. At number 10, best I played in a long time. But I see now, Rex, why everyone loves Pinehurst, right? Like Bandon Dunes and Pinehurst are like neck and neck, like top buddies trip destinations in the U.S. Like I see it now. I absolutely see it now, having brought my clubs for the first time, why people love it. And there's probably people listening to this podcast, people watching this on YouTube are like, yeah, you idiot. Of course we love Pinehurst. Why do you think all of us go there? Why do you think we're happy to spend $2,000 or $3,000 of our hard-earned cash to play golf here? I just want to say, I feel you. I get it now. I completely understand the appeal and cannot wait until I make a return trip to Pinehurst.
And I don't think anything can compare to St. Andrews, but I would say the Pinehurst is as close as we get in the United States, simply because of the situation of the town, how good number 2 is. And look, number 2 is one of many good golf courses in that really, really short, small, confined area. I will say, and I did want to go back and look, I think you sent this to me on Sunday night. Quote, how many golf balls do you think I should bring to Pinehurst? Apparently you were worried about it. And I did want to say that has to be the most golf nerdy statement you've ever made. I played Pinehurst number 2 with 2 colleagues from the Fried Egg. Love the Fried Egg. Please don't come after me. But that's got to be one of the most golf nerdy things I've ever heard.
It may be. I think the Fried Egg guys have absolutely carved out a niche. It was great playing with them on Monday. I played with designer Tom Doak on Tuesday for 4 or 5 holes, even in a driving rain.
Name dropping. Look
like,
at you.
But I think there's a certain genius to golf course design that I don't think I fully appreciated until I actually spent a little bit of time of Tom Doak. And he was kind of going through some of his stylistic designs, what he was thinking while designing the greens. I mean, the greens at number 10 are massive with a tons of slope and undulation. Like it takes an absolute genius to think about, I want this slope to be this high with this amount of grade, and it has to be positioned here that way balls can feed in. Like there's like an art to it. And I think he did a phenomenal job of explaining it. And I think now like the Fried Egg folks and Andy Johnson leads that group is explaining that to folks like you and I, who it's for a long time, golf course architecture has been like the craft beer of the golf world. We're like, you know, it's trendy. It tends to be, you know, not for everybody, maybe a little bit hipster, but it's great to see it going more mainstream. Cause I do think it's a very interesting niche. You and I will be together next week in Kentucky, hopefully drinking bourbon, appearing on live from the PGA Championship together. In the meantime, before we reconvene on Sunday night for a recap podcast of the Wells Fargo Championship, what are you getting into?
Actually, I made fajitas last night. I was going to bring this up on the Blackstone, and they were delicious. Hadn't done that before. So my middle son wanted to have a party. This was his last 21st birthday party extravaganza.
It's a three-week celebration.
That's the way we do birthdays in our household. It's usually a month. So I got off early, a week early with him. And then, I don't know, I'm going to decide what I want this weekend. It's been a minute since I've been home, so I kind of want to see what's going to be on TV. There's obviously going to be basketball. There's obviously going to be hockey, and then the Wells Fargo. So I'm sure I'll smoke something. How about you?
Certainly, you have not forgotten about bunk and what this Sunday represents with Mother's Day. There is still time for you to go to the florist.
Had until you just mentioned it. Yeah.
Some roses, bunk. I'm sure will not take that personally. Wife and I, as well as two other couples, will be on a tiki boat on Saturday in St. Augustine. That's what she wanted to do for her Mother's Day celebration. And then on Sunday, I think I'll do a Blackstone breakfast as well. Probably go to the water parks. It's supposed to be hot as hell. And I'll try and get the kids to write a card. Cam cannot yet read it, and he's only somewhat literate with writing, but it will be interesting to see, and I'm sure she will appreciate it nonetheless. All right, that is going to do it for this edition the Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lav. We'll be back on Sunday night for a full recap of the Wells Fargo Championship, as well as any other happenings over the next 5 days in the world of golf. And then next week, we will do the preview podcast on Wednesday from Valhalla, as well as mini pods each and every tournament round from the PGA Championship. Looking forward to doing that as always. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for so much for the support. In the meantime, mtsports.com/golf for all the latest needs in the world of golf. We'll talk to you on Sunday night. Enjoy the rest of your week and weekend.